Are you an advisor looking to work in the tax-exempt market? Are you looking to serve public school employees? Today, we interview a gentleman who has literally written a book on how to do this. Today's special guest is the author of a book that I think will become the go-to guide for any advisor who wants to work in the public 403b market. The title of the book is Wild West, Providing Fiduciary Advice to Public School Employees. It's focused on how advisors can serve the K-12 and higher ed markets. We think this will be a good follow-up to episode 22, where we looked at working with an advisor. So without any further ado, let's welcome our author, Mr. Scott Downhauer. Scott, how are you?
Hey, Dan. Doing well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Scott, I want to just tell any listeners we have that we are not running out of topics in interviewing each other. In all seriousness, I think you have written a book that will fill a gaping hole in the need out there to get the right kind of advisor serving this market. So I just, as you know, as a longtime advocate, I want to thank you for doing this.
Well, I appreciate those words. And I hope so as well. And I hope we fill that hole. And I'm excited about the book. It took me a long time to write. So I'm happy to finally get out here and kind of market it.
Okay, so before we get to the details of the book, Scott, let's go ahead and open up our beers. I mean, it is a Friday afternoon after all. What do you got?
Well, Dan, I have a real local beer. In fact, I'm going to take you to this place when you come up here in a couple weeks. It's from 8-Bit Brewing Company here in Murrieta, California. We're really starting to become a hub for microbrews, but this little valley here. So it's from 8-Bit Brewing Company. It's called True Brewman's Mosaic IPA.
Sounds great. Like, what, do you know anything about the name 8-Bit? Is that a horse type of tie-in?
I believe it is like bits and bytes, computers. Remember when we used to make 8-Bit, 16-Bit? So yeah, it's a play on that. I think you'll enjoy the merchandise there too. They have some really cool shirts and funny, they got some really great names too, so I think you're going to enjoy it.
Oh, I can't wait. And that's a little bit of a preview of what's going to happen in 2 weeks. I'm coming out to California, and Scott and I are going to go out to Palm Springs and interview Steve Shulo on a very, I don't know, how would you say, pretty emotional topic.
Yeah, I think it will be.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a preview. I don't know if anyone, how many people out there know this, but I lost my first wife over a decade ago, and that was a huge event emotionally. Obviously, we had a young daughter, but it was also a huge impact on our financial situation. So very sadly, Steve recently lost his longtime partner, and we are going to attempt to talk about this. And it'll be very interesting how that goes, how we'll be able to manage our emotions. But I think the hope is that it can be a really valuable, maybe even
cathartic.
See, cathartic. I'm already getting emotional. Say it again so I can say it.
Cathartic.
Cathartic. There we go. Oh, man, I mangled that. So for each of us, but also maybe provide some information for our listeners. Anyway, I had no idea I was even gonna bring that up. So, all right, Scott, you're done describing your beer. Let me talk about mine. Mine is from a Oregon brewery that you love, Deschutes.
Yeah, all right.
And it's seasonal. It's Red Chair. I think it's Northwest PA. NWPA is what they're calling it. Yeah, Northwest Pale Ale. So it looks, I love red ales, and so I think it looks really good. So let me go ahead and open that up.
All right.
It was cathartic, finally pronouncing that word.
Hey, I'm heading up to Central Oregon and Deschutes in, let's see, July for about 10 days.
You do that
So I'll be
every year, don't you?
every year, every year. In fact, a couple years ago, I was going up there, and my buddy who that we always go with another family, friends of the family that I've been going there probably 30 years with, and we usually go to the Deschutes Brewing Company at least once. Turns out Will Ferrell goes there every so often, and when my buddy was flying in, I had to go pick him up at the Redmond Airport, and he flew in on a jet with Will Ferrell. So we hung out with Will Ferrell in the airport while he was waiting for his bags. He had to wait for his bags like every other, jackass who goes to the airport. It was kind of funny.
He
So
strikes me as someone that would be friendly. Was that the case?
well, he was there with his family. It was 4th of July weekend. We didn't say a word to him. We didn't want to bother him. We could tell he was with his family. A couple young ladies walked up to him asking for a picture, and he politely declined, saying he was with his family. So, yeah, he seems like he'd be a real cool guy, but he was clearly with his family and his entourage, and it just didn't seem like a, cool thing to talk to. But he was like 5 feet from us, waiting for his bag. I'm like, he has to wait for his bags just like I do.
He's a tall guy, isn't he?
He's very tall.
Do you know that he's one of the co-owners of the new Los Angeles MLS team? I think they're called LAFC, maybe.
For now, they're called LAFC. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's cool.
placeholder name, probably.
Yeah.
All right, Scott, cheers.
Cheers.
Okay, Scott, you're a busy person. You just told me. Can I mention how many client plans you are currently working on?
Sure.
Okay. So Scott told me in our pre-podcast meetings that he is currently working on 16 retirement plans. Scott has a family. Scott does so many other things in the financial space. Scott, how did you have time to write this book?
I don't know, and it took me forever. I mean, it took me like 4 years to write it. You know what I did? And I don't know how I did it, but I would get up like 3 or 4 days a week at like 5 a.m. and then just write. And then I also spent a lot of time on planes over the past few years, and especially on my plane rides to like Alaska or Hawaii where you don't have internet. I found not having internet was a real help. Because I couldn't be disturbed. I mean, nobody could call me. Nobody could email me. I couldn't get texts. I couldn't jump onto the internet and do anything. So it was either read, watch movies, talk to the person next to me, which is completely out of the question, or work on the book. So between getting up at 5 a.m. and flying around the country, that's how I got done.
Yeah, I think as a writer myself, you've got to carve out that quiet time. And I don't know about you, but the internet is distraction. It's always right there. I'll just check one more thing before I get down to work, and I find it doesn't work. You've got to be really disciplined. So I salute you for that.
Yeah, well, it's a double-edged sword because in order to write, sometimes you need to do a lot of research. And so you need that internet there for you. But then because it's there, you're like, oh, well, let's check what's going on in politics. Let's check what's going on in stocks. Let's check what's going on in tech. And then you're like, oh, I'm completely distracted.
Yeah. Well, hey, you pulled it off. Your book, Wild West, Providing Fiduciary Advice to Public School Employees, is now available. You can get it directly through Amazon. If you want to throw a little love our way, the 403bwise.com / store has that book, and we have an affiliate link there. So if you buy it through there, we'll get a little bit of a kickback on that. But is there anywhere else you can get this book, Scott?
It's on Apple iTunes, so
Okay.
you can get it for your iBook app. It should be, I haven't checked the link yet, but it should be on Google Play. It should be pretty much on any major bookseller you can get it. Now, it's only available at this point as an ebook. So you have to download it to your Kindle or your iPad, but I'm working on an audio version of it. So I hope to have that out maybe by summer. So that'll be available on Audible. And then, I don't know, we might do a physical version, but I don't like dealing with physical books anymore. So
Well, Scott, if you were to do an audio version, who is your dream voice to read this book?
My dream voice would be like Jennifer Aniston or Jennifer Garner, but that has nothing to do with the book. So actually, I'm going to if I hired somebody, it would be quicker. I'd probably have it done a month from now. But I'm going to do it myself, and I'm going to have me and my son. We're going to kind of produce it together
Oh,
as
cool.
a project. So, which means my goal is to get out by summer, which means we'll have it out by summer of like 2018. So.
You should get a Morgan Freeman.
I should get Will Ferrell.
Well, that's right. That's funny. I remember hearing a story about Bryan Cranston that he did a voice, he read, did an audio book, and then one of the reasons he agreed to do it was because he always wanted to read that book. So it was, I think he realized it was a hell of a lot more work than maybe he had initially thought.
Funny. Maybe I'll get Bob Odenkirk.
Ooh, that would be good. Big
Better Call
fan.
Saul.
Hey, I gotta tell you, I'm really liking Better Call Saul. First episode, second season. I'm like, all right, it's getting good. You can see him breaking bad. Okay, let's get to this superb book called Wild West, Providing Fiduciary Advice to Public School Employees. Scott, who is this book aimed at? Who is your target audience?
So my target audience is financial advisors who want to act full time as a fiduciary and who want to work with public school employees. I know we always kind of talk about teachers, but probably 45, in some cases 50% of the people who are eligible for K-12 403B plans are non-teachers. They might be principals, superintendents, management, staff, people who drive buses, people who are work in the lunchroom, janitors. There is a whole subsection of non-teachers that can benefit from this as well. So really any public school employee. That's why I didn't say providing fiduciary advice to public school teachers on the public school employees. So I really want to get involved. So two things. One, advisors who might be new to the industry, who've got their CFP and who are very competent and are looking for a niche to get into. I think this is a great niche to work with. Then existing firms that want to expand and potentially work with teachers but don't know how to do it. And then finally, I want to get switchers. I want those people who are currently working for, I don't know, AXA, Legend, MetLife, VALIC, who are selling equity indexed annuities today and variable annuities and for commissions and are learning that that's maybe not the right way to be working with employees. So people who want to shift their focus and do things what I consider the right way. And work with the school teachers on a fiduciary basis, on a fee-only basis, and really transition to a different model. So those are the entities that I'm targeting. They're not necessarily our listeners, although actually we get a ton of advisors listening to this podcast, so maybe.
Yeah, oh wow. I think you've hit so many just superb points there. And I think I'll say too that, well, of course, you're not against advisors because you are an advisor, but I think sometimes there's been this notion that 403Bys is against advisors. We are not. We are against the wrong kind of advisor. And that's one of the many reasons I really am excited about this book because you can lead a charge here to get the right kind of advisor filling this space.
Yeah, we throw around the term advisor, and when we talk about it, we have a very specific idea in mind, that of someone who is a fiduciary, who at all times is working for the participant, working for the client's best interest. And the term advisor in the industry is really a completely different term. It refers to anybody who is in the business of selling financial products, and that is not the definition of an advisor. Those people do not fall under the Investment Advisors Act, and they shouldn't really be called advisors. They're salespeople, which we need salespeople, but they're not advisors in the traditional sense that they are there to provide financial planning, investment management on a fiduciary basis. And part of the problem, and one of the reasons I wrote this book, was that In this particular marketplace, there are very few fee-only fiduciary advisors. It is an extreme minority. And there are many reasons for that. But part of it is it's just such a, that's why I call it Wild West. It is such a crazy marketplace that is driven by such strange things. It's mostly driven by commission-based product sales and this old legacy culture that exists. And I want to kind of demystify that and show other advisors that, hey, you can work in this market and this is how you can do it. And I want to bring these people in so that, because there's just not enough of, not that I'm something amazing, but there's not enough of me to go around. There's not enough fiduciary advisors to go around. And when you think about how many public school employees there are, so we don't need a dozen, we need hundreds, we need thousands. And so that's why I wrote the book, to get people to even commit just a little bit of their business to working with teachers, and this is how they can, this is a roadmap for how they can do it.
Yeah, I believe this is such a
Essential.
ripe market. We work with and been contacted with lots of advisors. One of our favorites is Dave Grant out of Illinois, out of Chicago. I think he's working to address this with his network of advisors he's put together. I agree, Scott. I think this is such an untapped market. And I also think there are people that work for these companies that are more salespeople than advisors. And I think they probably, in the back of their mind, or maybe even the front of their mind, know that there's a better way, and maybe this can provide an escape hatch, for them.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I've met a lot of people who provide advice to this market, and a lot of them are really good people who actually know how to work with teachers. They understand it, but they're stuck in this old business model of having to sell a product in order to get compensated. And hopefully, they don't need this book as much, and because they already kind of know the market. But in terms of what I think what it offers them in terms of maybe a transition to a fiduciary model certainly can help there. And I don't expect someone who's selling products that pay them 8 or 10% commissions and sending them on trips to Maui are gonna suddenly switch to this fiduciary model. But perhaps it will, I don't know, change something within them to make them start thinking, well, maybe this is not exactly the right way to go for these people.
I agree. Well, Scott, I'm looking at the table of contents here. You have 20 chapters. It starts off with something called a mini memoir. Do you want to touch on that a little bit, Scott? So, how did you start this book?
Yeah, so the mini memoir, the first chapter was kind of a journey through the first decade of working in the 403B market. I got into this market, and it tells the story of how I got into the market, who I met, and how I ended up being kind of so ingrained and being really known as, a 403B advisor. It all started back in 1998, and when my wife became a school teacher. So I kind of tell the story of, my wife becoming a school teacher and how I got drawn into this kind of Wild West marketplace. But the memoir really takes you through just all the kind of weird and crazy things that we've been through. I mean, I met you in 99. I think it was 99. We wrote a book together, The 403B Wise Guide. And through different legislative things that we've gone through here in California, different advocacy things we've done across the US, different trips that you and I have been on. It really goes into just kind of this history of what's been going on and what I've been doing in the marketplace. And that might sound kind of boring, but it's actually the part of the book that is really more storytelling than technical, because there's parts of the book that are more focused on the technicals. But this is really kind of a walkthrough of some of the changes that we've been fighting for over the years.
I think that's some great history for people to read about. Also, they might have, people that are currently, maybe part of that old model. Maybe this is, they are sharing some of the challenges and struggles that you experienced beginning in your career. Scott, there's so much information here. You talk about the state of the school employee marketplace. Do you want to touch on that at all? Or is that maybe that's the Wild West, right? That's That's what that is.
Yeah, it really is. The Wild West aspect of 403B, if you've been listening to this podcast, you probably understand where we're coming from. And in fact, I was just talking to a reporter the other day who you had also talked to, and part of her quote is the Wild Wild West. And it's something that we've referred to this market as for a good 20 years, because it's kind of this last bastion of it's pretty much as much regulation as we have in it. From a product perspective, it's mostly unregulated. It's mostly these really junky products sold by people who a lot of times have no idea what they're doing. They get in the business for a little bit and they get out, but while they're in, they sell really bad products. And not a lot has changed. I think a lot has changed and a lot stayed the same. We still have a lot of junk products out there. But I think the tide is starting to turn. And so the State of the School Employees Marketplace chapter is really about where we were, where I want us to go, and kind of where we're at right now. And I think there are some good things that are happening. I think we've done a lot of good, but I think we still have a long ways to go to get where we really want to be. So I think what maybe you and I could probably do each year is update this. This idea of, what is the current state of the school employee marketplace? Our State of the Union address, we could do that once a year. It'd be kind of a cool feature.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. Like especially at New Year. I really like that. You also talk about business models, and I'm guessing that's various business models for advisors.
Yeah. And so one of the things, what's interesting about what I do is, so most advisors just stay advisors to individuals. And individuals and families, and I think it's probably that's mostly the focus of this book. But as I got into the marketplace and really kind of became an activist in this marketplace, it led me down sort of a different path than most advisors go down, and it actually led me into some institutional consulting. So I go into the business models that you might use as a personal financial advisor. And I outline what those are, for the most part, a fiduciary model. But within that fiduciary model is different ways that you can be compensated. And you can be compensated on an hourly basis, you can be compensated on a monthly basis, kind of like a gym membership fee. You could be compensated as assets under management. There's a lot of different kind of new ways you can be compensated these days that don't have to do with, selling products. So I go into some of the ideas there, but then I also talk a little bit about this institutional consulting. There is a whole nother kind of route that one can go that is more institutional, where you're working with employers, helping them set up 403B plans and 457 plans, and helping them set them up in a way that is efficient, using behavioral finance techniques and helping them lower fees and structuring these plans in a fiduciary manner, which most employers don't do because they don't know how. And then it's helping the employers, if necessary, set up their investment committees and things like that. This book is not really focused as much on the institutional side of consulting for 403B. It's really more, I wanted to get more advisors working with participants first. But I also do institutional consulting, less of it lately just because I've been so busy. But that's also an important thing. And we need some more advisors working in the 403B market who can do the institutional side as well.
Well, something just occurred to me, and I guess in a way this is obvious, but because this market is so underserved, you can really stand out. You can really carve out a niche in this market. And I think reading about your journey here really attests to this. You can be someone who stands out. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, I think this is the ultimate niche market. It's has a lot going for it. One, there's almost, you could drop somebody into any place within the United States, and they're going to be surrounded by school teachers and public school employees. They're all around. So there's a ready marketplace there. There's almost no fiduciary advisors in those areas. I mean, there's very few. The ones that I know, and I've been doing this now for in 2 years, it'll be 20 years, I can count on both my hands. I mean, I might only need one hand. There's just not that many of them. Although we're uncovering more of them every day, especially through this podcast. I think that's been amazing. So yeah, it's a great niche market. And not only that, you're working with some pretty cool people. Public school teachers, public school employees, they have a different perspective on things. And you know, these are the people who are serving our kids. And so we get an opportunity to serve them in this capacity. So the old phrase, doing well by doing good. You get to do something good. You get to work with good people. And I think there's a lot of opportunity because there's just not that many of us. But there is a lot of money in 403B plans, and people need help. Just one more thing on that. People think because they're school teachers and they have a defined benefit plan that they're too simplistic and they don't need much financial planning help. But there are plenty of planning opportunities with teachers. Teachers aren't just teachers. They're married to people who are non-teachers. Sometimes they're married to teachers. They have defined benefit plans. They have Social Security. There's an integration between Social Security and defined benefit. It can be complex. And so it's a great market. It's interesting. And there are some things you need to know, and that's why I wrote the book.
And Scott, you are constantly contacted by advisors. You'll often share me emails saying, "Hey, look, I just got this. I was contacted by this gentleman or this woman who's looking to get into this market." So I think there is a need for what you're providing here.
Yeah, I get emails and phone calls all the time from advisors who are wanting to get into this niche. And that's not an invitation for people to call me, by the way. I'll give you Dan's phone
909. Is that right? Did I get your area code right?
here. No, number is
Oh.
202-375. No, I want advisors in this market, so I'm willing to talk. I'm just so busy right now. But it's Yeah, I get people calling me all the time asking me how do I get into this business, and I mean, and that's why I wrote the book because I was spending so much time talking to advisors. I thought, you know what? What if I wrote a book?
What if I spent 4 years writing this book? It would
What
still save me time, right?
if I spent 4 years writing this book? Yeah, good point. So I wrote the book to say, hey, listen, if you want to get in this marketplace, read this. Start here, and then go to 403B Wise and look at the community there, and that's a good place to start. So it gave me a way to really multiply myself without having to. I can't spend every waking minute of the day talking to advisors. I have my own business to run. So.
I agree. And we've talked off air. We are in the process of redesigning 403B Wise. We're going to have more information on the different market segments, higher ed, healthcare. But our plan too is to really pump up the advisor information and participation. We are still working our way through that, but that is definitely a goal of this redesign.
And with that, Dan, one of the things that I want to point out is, I think it's great if people want to work with an advisor, and I want to bring advisors in to work with participants. But the heart of 403B Wise has always been, if you want to do this yourself, here are the tools to do it. Here's the information you need. Read the 403B Wise Guide. Read Teach and Retire Rich, Dan's book. Read the discussion board and all the items that we put on here. And if you still don't feel comfortable with it and you want some help, then that's when the advisors come in. And then sometimes your personal situation is so complex you need to bring in an advisor. But we still want to be for those people. We want Web 403B Wise in this podcast to still also be for people who think to themselves, you know what, I'm going to research this. I'm going to do it myself. And so 403B Wise is still going to be that go-to place. We're just going to expand it for people who want to do things a little bit, who may need a little help also.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. We were talking also off air about a recent post to the 403B Wise discussion board by a poster name. I think it's Corone. It's Couronne. I believe it's a female. I don't know why I believe that. But she is a longtime teacher. She just turned 40 and she's been investing with AXA. And she found our website, and she says in her post, she wishes she would have found us earlier. You know, what a great community. And she has lots of questions about how she can maybe save money on investing. And as you saw, Scott, from the post, there's so many posts here giving her really terrific advice.
You tweeted that out this morning, and I was like, oh man, I don't think I'm gonna have time to answer this question. And then I clicked on the link, and I just saw all of these responses from people, and some great responses. They were the perfect responses, great advice. And I thought, man, this is awesome. What a great community that someone can get on here. And obviously, it's not investment advice. The 403 Wise is not a registered investment advisor, but it's a good community of people that are helping each other out.
Yeah, and I think you alluded to it earlier. You know, there might be this idea that, you know, working with a teacher just means you're doing a 403B. No, as you said, they have a whole nother life outside of the classroom. They have houses, and they want to take vacations. They have kids who are going to college. They have insurance needs, on and on and on. So, yeah, we really hope to kind of fill this everything from the do-it-yourself to people who need more sophisticated help. And I think it's a little bit like therapy, Scott. I think everybody would benefit from therapy. I think everybody would benefit from working with the right kind of advisor. How about that, Scott? You could be a therapist and an advisor, or are you already?
I think I am already. I've been in some interesting meetings, and from therapist to marriage therapist to it would be really fun to do like a maybe not a reality show, but to actually write a show about financial advisors and kind of the client experiences they have. I love my clients. I'm happy to say that I have some great clients. But every so often you get some pretty funny situations.
Well, you think of all the, you know, just the explosion in you know, series programming out there, you know, like Better Call Saul, all of the stuff that's out there. Maybe this is an area that needs to be mined for dramatic interpretation.
It could be. We'll see. Maybe that's in our future, a little screenplay.
All right, Scott, so I'm looking over these chapters here. Are there any other items you'd like to point out that you would like to make aware to maybe an advisor out there who's thinking, okay, I'm thinking of maybe buying this book, which is called Wild West, Providing Fiduciary Advice to Public School Employees. It's available on Amazon, Apple, and also the 403bwise.com/store. It's an affiliate link, so we get a little bit of a kickback there.
So I think a couple of things I'd focus on. Part of the book is antagonistic and purposely so. I want people to understand, or advisors to understand, really what the underpinnings of what's going on in the marketplace. And I think there's a lot of, I think there's some good things going on, but for the most part, every day I still get blown away by things that I see. The misrepresentations and outright fraud, and the fact that there are very few protections in the 403B world, even with this new potential Department of Labor conflict of interest rule, it's nearly fully inapplicable to 403Bs. And so there's not the same consumer protections available to people in non-ERISA 403B plans as there are in, say, 401Ks. So I'm purposely antagonistic, trying to get. Really trying to get advisors pissed off. This book is designed to piss you off, and if it doesn't, I think I've failed. And it's a call to action to, maybe you're a successful firm and you're doing well, but you read this book and you get pissed off, and that's what I hope you do. And you say, you know what? I'm going to hire a couple new advisors, and we're going to expand our firm, and we're going to work it. We're going to work this niche. Maybe not because it's the most profitable thing in the world for us, but because it's something that we believe in and it's the right thing to do. So that's part of the book as well. And then I spend a lot of time explaining the intricacies of working with some of the different entities that you'll come across. It's nothing like 401k. It is just nothing like it. So you've got compliance, these things that I call compliance third-party administrators, and that's a real crazy part of the market as well, because some of them sell products, some of them sell commission-based products, and yet they're supposed to be essentially running the plan, and it's like the fox guarding the hen house sort of situation. And then I do go into two other things, or actually three other things I think are interesting: Social Security and school employees. So there's a whole subset of teachers that don't pay into Social Security, but that doesn't mean that you're off the hook as a planner for planning for them for Social Security. They might have a spouse who receives Social Security, and you need to know how that is going to work for the teacher or public school employee who isn't paying into Social Security, because they are affected by that. And then it talks about Social Security in terms of for those employees that do pay into Social Security. It talks about non-teachers and how their plans fit in. And then I go into for California, since I live and work in California, we have some interesting laws here on the books. In fact, some of them, Dan and I, have been played some part in getting passed. 403B Compare being one of them, which is a website that's actually in the process of being redesigned right now that discloses products here in California. This was the 408B2 regulations a decade before they were put into place by the DOL. We were way ahead of our time here, and we're kind of proud of that. So we go into California specific laws, and then a little bit of time on pension maximization, which is a topic for another show, but I have some strong views on that.
Scott, do you want to explain why some teachers might not be paying into Social Security? Because that's not true across the board.
Yeah, so I think it's in my book now, but it's something like 13 states where public school teachers do not pay into Social Security. There was a time where each state was given the opportunity to opt out of, so or everybody was opted out of Social Security, and they were allowed to be opted. Essentially, they were required to be in Social Security unless they did an opt out. And so certain states opted out of it. This was like back in the 80s. And so there remains something like 13 states where teachers do not pay into Social Security. And because of that, they're very reliant on their defined benefit plans. You really need to understand their defined benefit plan. But like I said, they might actually have some Social Security that they've paid into on their own from another job. In teaching, you get a lot of job switchers. So you might have someone who paid into Social Security for a decade or maybe even 15 years, then switched to become a teacher. And unbeknownst to them, that has a dramatic effect on what their payout is going to be. And it's not actually shown on their annual Social Security statement. It doesn't show on there that it's actually going to be reduced by a certain amount of money, sometimes up to $400 a month. So they get to retirement, they retire, they start collecting Social Security, and they suddenly are wondering why their check is so much less than they had planned on. And so if you're an advisor working with educators, you need to understand Social Security, even if they don't pay into it. So there's a whole chapter that explains almost everything you need to know on that.
Yeah, I think that's hugely important. And I think there's a lot of confusion about that. You also mentioned the term misrepresentation. Did I tell you that was the name of my first advisor? She was nice. I just couldn't trust her.
That's good, Dan. I didn't know that. I mean, we've known each other now for since like 1999, and I
Yep,
had
good
no
old
idea.
misrepresentation. So, Scott, I see here chapter 19 is called 403B Wise and Dan Otter. How did you get that past your editor?
Well, actually, I had this great editor. His name is Howard Goldberg, and as I was, I got the book together. I loosely had the chapters in the order that I wanted them. And as I was reading through it, I just realized it just felt disjointed and kind of disconnected. So this is a sidebar to your question. And I thought, I really need a professional editor for this. And somehow I was talking to Steve Shulow, who, we've interviewed in the past, we're gonna interview again. And he turned me on to a gentleman who had just retired from Reuters in New York, a major editor there, managing editor there. He had just retired, and he was looking for some freelance work. And so we worked together for about 3 months, and oh my gosh, if it wasn't for him, I don't know what I would have done. He was so good. And I actually met him at Dan Robertson's funeral. Great guy, and he did a fantastic job on this on the editing part. But your question was Dan
Well, do you want
Otter,
to
Horror
say,
Creepy What?
well, before that, do you want to say his name in case anyone else might be looking
Oh
to write a book?
yeah.
And
Howard Goldberg. Howard Goldberg is his name, and he actually lives out in Palm Springs. Maybe we should stop by and say
yeah.
hi to him when we're out there. But yeah, he was fantastic. He's just so. I love people who are just so good at their craft, you know, because it makes me want to be better, and then it also makes me feel like I'm just not as good at what I do. So yeah, he's awesome. But yeah, so I couldn't write this book without writing a chapter about, you know, Dan Otter and 403bwise.com, because yeah, I got into this industry because of my wife, but it was this website, 403bwise.com, that I found when I was trying to research and figure out this crazy market all the way back in 1998, I think it was. And that completely transformed. Really, I don't think I would be working in this marketplace today if it wasn't for 403bwise.com and Dan Otter and
Well, I
you.
appreciate it. I wasn't looking for, I wasn't fishing here for compliments.
Yeah, for
I'll
sure.
credit misrepresentation. If I hadn't met misrepresentation, I wouldn't have gotten pissed off about what was going on. And it's just interesting how we kind of aligned there and came together. I think it was pretty cool happening.
Well, it was interesting. So I wanted to write a chapter about it, and you know, this was you started 403B Wise during a tough time in your life, and we I started emailing you, and it just so happened that we lived 45 minutes from each other. I mean, what are the odds? You could have been anywhere in the United States, and it turns out you were up the freeway.
Yeah, I was in Anaheim Hills. It was 2000 when we launched the website. My friend John Moore and I, fellow teacher who helped me start it, I think it was 1999, and my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer shortly after the new year in 2000, the new millennium, and it was pretty rough. And this was one of the few escapes I had during that time, was just to literally go into my garage. We were a garage startup and work on this. And it was a very healthy distraction, as was teaching. I actually found teaching to be cathartic. Did I say that? Did I pronounce that correctly?
You got it, man.
So, and we'll touch more on that, I think, and could be our next podcast, actually. Well, I think we're going to interview someone, potentially before that. But yeah, it's really interesting in your life how some doors close, and that can be very emotional, but other doors open, and that's why I am optimistic about life.
It was so that's where I started emailing you, and you were kind enough to email me back. I started posting on the 403B Wise message boards, and I think I got into a couple tiffs with Steve Shulow, you know, and we, you know, eventually we became great friends. And I told you I was writing a book. This and I had, man, I was getting up every morning because I didn't have any business, you know, I had hardly any clients, so I'm like, well, I'll just write a book on this stuff. It's egregious. So I decided to write this book. I wrote. Dan must have, it must have been like 200 or 300 pages of just blah. I mean, I just threw up on the web on the page, and we got together and you're like, Scott, I want to write a book too. Let's do this together. And so we got together one summer and we started, you know, yeah, you looked at it and you're like, Scott, this is great information, but we have to cut it down. We have to make it, you know. So we took like 300 pages of stuff and Dan magically transformed and wrote it into the 403 Wise Guide, which was short, sweet, to the point. It was fantastic. So that was where, you know, that's where, you know, we kind of started. So I wrote some of the funny things that we've gone through, you know, like all the times that we've been mistaken as a gay couple.
Yes, it is true.
And now we're going to Palm Springs together in 2 weeks.
That's right. That's
We're not
right.
helping it, but not that there's anything wrong with that. We're totally fine. But so yeah, the chapter was partially an ode to 403B Wise, partially an ode to you, because I wouldn't be able to do this without the work, the groundwork that you laid.
Well, right back at you, Scott. I think we are more powerful together. And I think this book is going to be a very powerful tool. Wild West, providing fiduciary advice to public school employees. Well, Scott, is there anything else you would like anyone listening to this to know about this book?
I think we covered it. 14, oh, it's 14.99. I don't really, I didn't do this to make money off the book. I'd give it away for free, but I don't feel that giving it away for free is really, I think there's a lot of value there, and I think people just won't take it seriously if it's for free. And for $15, you're getting thousands of dollars worth of value, trust me.
I agree.
But I also didn't want people to think, oh, he's just trying to capitalize this as an opportunity. I'll find other ways to capitalize on it as an opportunity. So, Dan, and I think you'll appreciate this, the proceeds of the book are going to go to two different charities. So anything that the book generates, hopefully it will generate something, are going to go to two different charities. The first one is the Breast Cancer Research Foundation.
Wow.
So an honor. And then the other one is the Polaris, which is a leader in the global fight to eradicate modern slavery.
Oh, wow. How do you spell that, Scott?
Polaris.
Ah, great,
So
great.
freedom happens now is their motto. And it's just hopefully we can bring some sort of additional light to the fact that people are still enslaved in this world, not just in what we think of as slavery, but human trafficking is just it's huge, and it's something that we don't really think about here, even though it actually affects a lot of Americans, because they're I mean they're I worked with someone in San Diego whose daughter had been kidnapped, sold into sex slavery,
Oh my God.
and was not they got her back after like 5 or 7 years, something
Oh
like
my
that.
God.
And it's just not something we really think about in this country, that this great country that we live in, but it's real, it happens every day, and it's literally all around you. So I don't know if there's just a little bit, if we can bring a little bit of attention to this subject. And I know breast cancer is gets a lot of attention as well, but it's really something that's dear to your heart, and I think none of us have. I think all of us have been affected in some form or fashion. So, that's what I would want people to know.
Oh, wow, Scott, I've always thought you were an impressive person, and somehow, you've gone up four notches. So you go past 11 on a scale of 1 to 10. About 4 years ago in Albuquerque, on the two, we only have two freeways, one that goes north south, that's the 25, and then the east west is the 40. A bunch of billboards went up saying "Stop human trafficking," and it really started a conversation in this community, because I think you have a lot of people being, taken from this area, but also passing through this area, and it was powerful. I have to say, I'm not a huge fan of billboards. I think they kind of trash views. I think they're unhelpful. But this is a case where these billboards I thought were educational, and it really got interesting discussions going in this city. And they started talking about, gosh, we're so off topic here, but like strip clubs, how many of these women are in there against their will? I mean, I think that's a conversation that's never been had. And I credit these billboards for starting that. And it's interesting talking to students when you say, you talk to about statistics that there are more people in slavery now than maybe a couple hundred years ago. And that's kind of mind-blowing for students.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, I think the overall arc is downward. Steven Pinker's The Better Angels of Our Nature certainly demonstrates that, but we shouldn't settle for it's getting better. We need to do whatever we can to make it better, so.
All right, Scott, we're probably reached a pretty good point here to go ahead and bring this to conclusion. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, just thanks for I won't say having me on the show, because I'm usually on the show, but thanks for letting me take over the show. I appreciate it.
Happy to do it, and thanks for writing this book, Wild West: Providing Fiduciary Advice to Public School Employees, Amazon, Apple, and the 403bwise.com bookstore. You can access it from our homepage or 403bywise.com/store. Thanks again, Scott. Look forward to talking to you soon.
You bet.
See you, buddy. The music you hear on the Teach and Retire Rich podcast was provided by Moreland and Arbuckle. You can check them out at moreland.com.